Okay, I think let me give this a shot. Hi, this is Jonathan Katz. You can see me on the Explosion Bus, and I've been talking with Mr. Media, a guy who's never been convicted of a felony. A guy who claims never to have been convicted of a felony. I'm talking to... hi, this is Jonathan Katz, and I'm talking to... Truly, pedophilia, that's tough. Hi, I'm Jonathan Katz, and I'm a convicted felon, and I'm coming to you from a minimum security prison. Okay, it's my home. Hi, this is Jonathan Katz, and I'm talking with Mr. Media, who I often refer to as Bob. I like that one the best.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to cartoonist Howard Cruz, whose new book is The Other Sides of Howard Cruz. This is his third time on our show. Stick around, although don't expect to see any other sides of Mr. Media. What you see is what you get around here. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, brought to you today by the Stitcher app for mobile devices. Give it a test drive today at stitcher.com/mrmedia, Mr. Media. I love this free radio app, and I think you will too. Stitcher.com/mrmedia. Today's episode of Mr. Media Interviews is brought to you by GoDaddy.com. You know GoDaddy.com from their wild and sexy commercials, but isn't it time you actually test drove their web hosting and domain registration services yourself? For a limited time, Mr. Media listeners can save 10% on the already low price of web hosting services at GoDaddy.com by entering the promo code POD4 at checkout. Again, that's 10% off web hosting when you go to GoDaddy.com and enter the promo code POD4, that's P-O-D, the number 4, at checkout. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of cartoon characters largely abandoned in the 1970s, but praying for a revival any day now in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. My dad once said that nothing bad would ever happen to me because I could always turn around and write about it, thus finding some good in any situation. He might as well have been talking about my friend, cartoonist Howard Cruz. Every time I turn around, it seems that Howard has unleashed another collection of his wonderful underground cartoons and comic strips. Now, that speaks to a deep archive of quality content he's created, of course, but also to never letting any slight or perception of wrongdoing go unrewarded by revealing it in his art. Or, I could be making all this up as I go along, which I suppose could also be a trait of Howard's. Howard's newest raid on the archives is The Other Sides of Howard Cruz. It includes a big helping of his beloved Barefoot strip, which means cockroaches, frogs, a sexually frustrated Dolly, and is he or isn't he Headrack? Then we get introduced to Shearwell the Sheep, the squirrels of Tops and Button, Big Marvy, and yes, even the nightmares of Little Lulu. There is plenty of the underground stoner, sex-starved humor for which he is famous, as well as some straight above-ground comics that you could probably show your grandmother, but not a whole lot. This Cruz fellow has a lot of sides, and I'm hoping we'll see a few more of them today. Howard Cruz, welcome back to Mr. Media.
Thank you for inviting me.
My pleasure. Always good to see you. I'm trying to think. We have known each other since 2003, 2004 now. I think it's been quite a while.
Whenever it was that I came down to the art school down there.
Ringling School of Art and Design. And you know what the great irony is here? Well, maybe it's not irony. Maybe that's the wrong word. Is that I've now got a daughter who's a junior in college looking at art schools, including Ringling.
Wow.
I wouldn't have guessed that in 2003, 2004 when we met down there with Will Eisner, but there you go. And yes, for people who keep track, that was my way of sticking the name Will Eisner into yet another interview. It's funny how
didn't you write a book about him?
Did I? Yeah, and you'd think from watching the show, it's the only book I ever wrote.
What was the name of that book?
I believe it was Will Eisner, A Spirited Life, published in 2005, coming soon to an ebook near you.
Oh, very good.
Thank you, Howard. Check's in the mail. So, Howard, how deep exactly is your comic archive? Is it what we're seeing spread out behind you in all those cabinets, or, you know, how much are we talking about?
Well, I mean, in my cabinet are probably, I guess, a third of the comics I've drawn that the other originals have been purchased over the years by collectors. But my archive, this book completes a large portion of everything that I've done that I would still show. there are some Barefoot strips that didn't make it into the book for technical reasons. I had to do a lot of surgery on the ones that used a lot of Zipitone because contemporary scanners don't like Zipitone, and I can't just pick up ones during – there was a period of about 4 or 5 years in the 70s when I was prompted to use a lot of Zipitone during the years when I was doing Barefoot strips for a comics book, Dennis Kitchen's magazine. And I sort of came to regret the use of Zipitone because of its not very good relationship with digital scanning. And so the books that use a lot of gray tones, the Barefoot strips, I mean, that use a lot of scanning have been laboriously poured over in Photoshop and adapted to get rid of the Zipitone screens and, you know, replace them with perfect screens that are produced by Photoshop. And I didn't get them all done. And plus, we didn't, you know, a good portion of the book is the Barefoot strips, but this wasn't a complete Barefoot collection. There are some other Barefoot strips, but not a lot. And then when you go back beyond Barefoots, you're getting into Tops and Button, the squirrel panel you referred to, which was a period when I was just learning. It was a daily cartoon panel about squirrels that ran in the Birmingham Post-Herald for 2 years. And it was a time when I was learning, and you could tell that I was learning because, you know, many of them show signs of a very green cartoonist who didn't quite know how to do stuff that would hold up over the years. So I would not reprint a complete Tops and Button series, although there are some of the Tops and Button strips that I'm very fond of and I think are very funny. I actually tried reviving the strip under a different name called Squirrely and Earl because I thought, in retrospect, Tops and Button was a slightly stupid name. I draw better now than I did in the 70s, and so I essentially redrew some of the Tops and Button strips that I really like and put them on my in my blog. Go back far enough, but Tops and Button sort of makes Barefoots look like a big hit. And I say that because there were a lot of people who didn't like Barefoots because it looked too cute. Tops and Button, personally, I really like the Tops and Button humor. But I just have to accept the fact that the world is not caught up with me on that on a large scale. And not that many people have said, oh, do more squirrel cartoons. So it's my little pet project from a learning period in my life. But I would not, you know, going back beyond Barefoots is pretty dicey in terms of what deserves to be reprinted.
Okay. Well, and I before we go any further, for those who may be watching this who are not dyed-in-the-wool cartoonists, you want to take a second and explain what Zipitone is? I know because I always loved the effect of it, but maybe you want to just clear that up for people.
Well, back in the old days, it was the best way to get gray tones into a comic strip without actually painting in grays, which created production problems. It was a sort of a film, a transparent film with adhesive on the back that had printed on it the kind of Ben Day dots, which you see in daily comic strips all the time. Well, you did for years until comic strips in the newspapers went digital. And that was the way that Beetle Bailey could have a gray army uniform back before digital days. And so it had to be pasted, you know, pasted down, cut out, the area cut down and pasted down on the original artwork. So I still have a lot of original artwork from a certain period that has this film stuck, adhering to the pages. And if I became aware that this was going to create a problem in the digital era, I tried various ways to see if I could get it to turn loose its grip from the artwork. It wasn't easy. Ultimately, I worked out a system where you use a hairdryer, the adhesive turned loose, but it was quite laborious to do. So I turned to Photoshop for most of that Zippitone removal.
And that would be number 1400 in a series called Solutions to Technical Problems by Great Cartoonists. Join us again next week. Sorry. Zippitone, very popular in the 70s, and you would see that I think cartoonists who were less experienced but had grander ambitions tended to use an awful lot of it, and then I think cartoonists who really had the hang of it would use less, but it would be well placed. Is that safe to say?
Ultimately, I felt I wanted to pull back from using it very much, except for special situations, because I was aware that a certain sense of the handcrafted look of comics was lost, because Zippitone creates a very mechanical-looking screen. So I sort of switched over to more, hand shading, which, of course, you see in something like Stuck Rubber Baby and in some of the Wendell strips, although I still use the thing that's special about the shading you get with Zippitone is that it's extremely smooth. So, for example, if I did a comic strip where I wanted to suggest night air, I didn't want the reader to be thinking about, oh, look at all the pen scratches he's made on the page to get that gray tone. Frequently, I would continue to use Zippitone for that, but very sparingly. I like the hand look of comics. I don't like mechanically produced word balloons. I don't like, typeset in word balloons. I'm old-fashioned in that regard.
We mentioned mostly in kiddingly our late friend Will Eisner before, and he had a practice because his stuff was reprinted constantly over the years. But his thing was to go back, and he was constantly tinkering with his pages. It's almost legendary the changes that he would make over the years because he wasn't satisfied with this drawing or he didn't like that. He'd cut a whole thing out and put in a new panel. When you go back for these reprint editions you've done the last couple of years, are you changing much outside of something technical like the Zippitone, or are you pretty much accepting that what you did is the way it should remain?
I kind of have to make peace with that's the way I drew it the first time, because if you start tinkering with it, then the next panel doesn't look the same. At this point, I am virtually incapable of drawing the way I did during the Barefoot days. So if you see Barefoot strips that I have drawn in recent times, and I haven't done many, but occasionally I will revisit the character for some little special thing, but it just looks differently. I can't help the tricks that I've learned in drawing from creeping into it, and it simply doesn't look like the way Howard Cruise drew in the early 70s. Now, when I did Stuck Rubber Baby, my graphic novel, in that case, nothing was published until it was all drawn. And in that case, I did go back and redraw panels from the early pages because there's nothing like drawing the same character for 4 years to make him evolve. So the toll and poke of late in the book didn't perfectly match the toll and poke in chapter one. And so when that was a particularly egregious difference, I would go back and patch in changes.
Well, and for comics fans, put that in perspective. If you look at like early Peanuts, for example, compared to later day Peanuts, it's very different. Even more modern, Doonesbury from the early 70s to Doonesbury now, it's almost like two different artists did it. It's hard to believe that it's the same person, but the
absolutely
style evolves.
If you look at the beginnings of the comic strip, Steve Canyon, for example, Steve Canyon looks quite different. He's slimmer. He looks more gaunt than he ultimately became. And, in a way, cartooning has something in common with acting in that you slowly inhabit the character. If you draw the same character a lot and put the same character in different situations, eventually it stops being looking at the character from the outside and it starts feeling the character from the inside. And once that happens, it goes through changes that are more in harmony with the way you feel about the interior life of the character. For example, Wendell, in my Wendell comic strip, the first times I drew him, he was more goofy looking. But as I came to draw him and like him more, he sort of became a little cuter, a little more winsome. Mm-hmm. And that just, you know, I don't find it easy to draw characters in an ugly way once I've come to really like them.
Did you hear the doorbell? Yeah, the dog and the doorbell. Yeah, just dropping off a package. Thank you.
I know how that goes.
Thank you,
PS. We have a dog. She's very quiet.
Well, I was it completely killed my punchline. I was going to say that Steve Canyon. The biggest difference there was not so much the change in drawing style, but wasn't Steve Canyon was straight when the strip began, and over the years. It was gay, was it? No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Mates closet in case if that happened.
The interruption of the doorbell and the dogs just made that a little more tough. This would be one of those pause moments because my wife checked the door. I just want to make sure everything's cool. Everything cool? Okay. So this will be one of those points where I'll edit in a copy of the cover. Okay. So we were talking about the older strips and how you look back on things. Entertainment Weekly has been doing a thing in the last couple of years where they give actors, directors, an opportunity to promote a new project, but in exchange for doing that, they have to apologize for an earlier project that embarrasses them. And I've never asked this, but I'm just thinking, is there any project in all of your years of cartooning that you'd like to take a moment now and apologize for that you feel was, you know?
Well, I mean, are you talking about ineptness of drawing or are you talking about thematically?
Anything that you right now feel that you, and you, there doesn't have to be anything. You know, you could be perfect, but I'd like to say that in my case, I'm apologizing for the Frank Zappa interview I did in 1978 and just posted on the internet, not because it's any good, because it's horrible, but because I know people love Frank Zappa and they can't get enough. But, you know, so I'll apologize first. And then if there's any work of yours in the last 30 or 40 years that you'd like to apologize to the public for perpetrating on them, be my guest.
Well, I mean, actually, it's only in recent years. Well, I mean, it was only in the mid-80s that I began to have collections done of my work. Mm-hmm. And there are some strips that I was wise enough to never reprint because I was, you know, my low consciousness I was unconscious sexism, was even, you know, worse. I mean, in some cases in the work that is in The Other Side of Howard Cruz, there'll be little points at which I got criticized for sexism. And in retrospect, I realized that there was validity to those criticisms. And I even have some sort of homophobic humor in little bits and pieces in some of the Barefoot strips, which is characteristic oftentimes when these were done before I was out of the closet professionally, although I was out of the closet personally. But there's this tendency to want to get the approval of your peers or people who are not even your peer, people who are ahead of you, people who are your the folks you admire. And there was a lot of homophobia in the underground comics. And so sometimes a little gay slur would feel like, oh, that's what underground cartoonists do, is they put in these little things. And, you know, those embarrass me. If anyone points them out, I will often apologize for them and say, well, that was me being stupid at a young age. And as a matter of fact, in the comic strip, How Barefoots Was Created, which is in The Other Sides of Howard Cruz, mm-hmm. The one panel that's perpetually embarrassing for me in that strip is the final panel in which I'm interacting with Barefoots, but I have sort of on my arm a you know, a female that, although I don't say, oh, this is my girlfriend, the default assumption would be, oh, that's Howard Cruz and his girlfriend. And that was I was on the cusp of coming out of the closet, but I hadn't quite done it yet. And that was just this reflex, oh, underground cartoonists have girlfriends. And it was only in retrospect that I thought, that was just a beard. That was just me not being willing to be honest. It's not that I was required to have to say, oh, here's my gay boyfriend or something. But you could tell here was a guy who wasn't yet at ease with letting the readers know that he was gay. But I was literally, that was drawn at practically the same time that I drew my first gay story, which was the head rack story called Gravy on Gay, which is not in the new book because the new book is specifically organized around, these are the non-gay comic strips. That's why it says the other side, because everyone knows about my gay stuff. But in my complete gay collection, which is called Head Rack to Claude, I have that Gravy on Gay story. But this, I sort of wince whenever I look at that last panel in How Barefoots Was Created. And in point of fact, that's one of the rare instances I redrew that strip for my website, and I corrected that in my website. It is a male for that panel, but also was, drawing it in a very different, more modern Howard Cruz way. So, you always look back at yourself and you see the young, stupid person, what can you do? If you try to wipe all of that out, you wind up just cut all the good stories out of the newspaper, and leave it for somebody else to look through the holes. Hmm.
I noticed in reading these Barefoot strips, and you brought up the coming out, and I wanted to ask you about that, and I was looking for a good way to get to it, but a lot of these strips have to do with Barefoots and Dolly constantly being sexually frustrated and not being able to lure Barefoots into her bed. And I thought, okay, well, was a lot of this kind of leading up to, because I wasn't sure. I had the sense, because I don't know that much about your personal history, but I had the sense that you probably were not out at that point. But in the comic, you're kind of reading, now you kind of look at it, you're reading into it, okay, this is a guy who's, he spends a lot of time with Dolly, but what Dolly wants and what he wants don't seem to be the same thing.
Right. Well, I mean, I was out in my personal life by the time I did Barefoots. I was in a relationship with a guy and stuff like that. But Dolly sort of represented the part of me that, is always sexually frustrated, which I think comes with being, a young male with hormones. I think the male that feels totally satisfied with his sex life is rare, I would say. Particularly when they are
gay or straight. I think that's a safe,
particularly when they're young and the hormones are raging. I just viewed her as an analog and a stand-in for the various sides of my personality that were represented by the different sides by the different characters in Barefoots. I mean, Headrack was the artist, the frustrated artist. Dolly was the frustrated libido. Barefoots was this kind of cosmic being who, wasn't totally rooted in the same reality as everyone else. I didn't think of Barefoots as being gay or anything. I thought of, he just sort of floats slightly in a realm beyond. And then the roaches are sort of the mass population of the world that is totally not reflective and just reacts to things. And then Headrack is kind of the cosmic unseen part of the universe. And these are the kinds of concepts that float around in the head of someone when they're doing a lot of psychedelic drugs. At the time I was drawing them, I was not sort of doing the drugs, but I was reflecting on the thoughts that were in my head at an earlier time when I was doing a lot of the drugs.
Well, I was just, as you were talking about that, I was just thinking that from your description, maybe I'm way off track here. I don't know if you ever watch The Big Bang Theory, but I'm thinking that Sheldon on that show, the tall, lanky fellow played by Jim Parsons, of no known sexuality would seem to be kind of like Barefoots, and Dolly would kind of be like his roommate, Leonard, just for what it's worth.
Well, you know, there's a long history in comics of the avaricious, not avaricious, but the sex-starved female trying to get the, you know, the sort of male, who innocent male. Everything from Pogo and I forget, who was that French skunk that was always after him? I can't think
of Pepe Le Pew?
No,
I'm sorry.
That's a whole other thing.
Yeah, sorry.
Warner Brothers, I think. Or maybe not. Anyway, I'm thinking of her, but I can't think of the name. And there was a Hildegard Hamhock or something in Tumbleweeds. And but sort of the, I went a step beyond that in that Dali was very specifically, it was about, I want this guy's body. It tends to be the woman like Daisy May who wants to be married is more common trope. But oftentimes, you know, the sort of mild character in the middle who is surrounded by people who have much more, they wear their passions on their sleeves much more. A lot of comedy is built around that. Everything from the Mary Tyler Moore Show, where it was the secondary characters who were crazy, and Mary was kind of, you know, just dealing with all the crazy people around her.
I was just thinking, I think my favorite of the Barefoot strips in this collection has got to be the one where Dali, of course, is sexually frustrated and she's actually been with someone and an older guy and it's not working for him. So she gives up and she goes to her room and opens the drawer and pulls out her vibrator, and she's made this whole speech about how a woman can always rely on her, blah 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 blah, and this, the expectations on the vibrator are so intense and so strong, the vibrator wilts. I mean, it was just somehow, I don't know where, but it seemed like, it almost seemed like a great greeting card opportunity to me in some setting.
Well, interestingly, that strip was drawn during the period when I was doing stuff for Playboy. And Hugh Hefner just wouldn't get that joke. Took the last line. I forget now the exact last line because this was like 25 or 30 years ago or something. But it was kind of a line about, you know, none of us, you know, live up to our legends or something like that, talking about the vibrator. And Hefner had to approve all cartoons for Playboy. And he said, well, this is okay, but instead of why don't you have it explode? And I thought, well, no, that's not the point. It's very weird because, I mean, you know, I mean, Hefner is a million times richer than I am and consequently could be assumed to be smarter. But for some reason, he just didn't get this joke. And that was, you know, I sort of liked it. So this is really the first opportunity I've had to publish that, I think. I have stuck it in some obscure publication somewhere along the way, but I think this is the first time it's appeared.
Well, and I have to say, in Hefner's defense, of course, he loves comics and cartoons. So
I know, and I appreciated that.
Yeah.
It was a little unsatisfactory to be. I mean, I never met the man, but I would only deal with his cartoon editor, Michelle Urey, in New York, and then she would take my proposed strips and go to him, and he would come back with his notes and everything. And I remember one time Robert Crumb made a very acerbic comment about the fact that even Harvey Kurtzman had to be edited by Hugh Hefner for his Lanny Fanny strips, which is, I mean, I appreciate the fact that Hefner loves cartoons, but if you've got Harvey Kurtzman on the payroll, you let him do what Harvey Kurtzman knows how to do better than anybody, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, if your man used to control, your man used to control.
Yes.
So I want to go back to something you said a little while ago. You were talking about there was certainly a perception, if not reality, that a lot of the underground cartoonists were somewhat homophobic. And I wondered if, when you actually did come out, if that caused any issues between you and maybe some cartoonists who didn't know you were out, didn't know, you know, before, and did you see any friendships affected, any professional relationships affected by coming out?
Well, not really. And, you know, in this circumstance, it's sort of parallel to coming out personally. When you're in the closet personally, you have a lot of fears about people who will reject you or condemn you or say nasty things to you if you come out. Usually they're exaggerated. I mean, the most obvious one's being afraid that you'll be rejected by your parents. I mean, that's a classic gay anxiety for people in the closet. Usually when people come out, they discover that they have, not given people credit, for being more flexible than they feared. But also, frankly, it simplifies life because the people that really hate that you're gay usually will avoid you after that. So I don't know who was saying bad things about me in the underground comics world after I came out, because the ones who stayed in contact were the ones for whom it didn't matter. And, you separated. Somewhere out there are probably underground cartoonists who were real snarky about it among themselves, but fortunately they didn't bother to be snarky in public or to my face. And that simplified my life and was, basically I got good reactions from a lot of them. And I think it made a big difference to me in terms of my peer acceptance, because I think part of my coming out was not so much the Hedrack story, which was about Hedrack being gay, not Howard being gay, but when I started editing gay comics, when I sent out the letter soliciting things and announcing my editorship in 1979, that was my real coming out. And then when gay comics started coming out, anybody who was not paralyzed by homophobia could see that my work had improved a lot, because art is better when it's honest. And suddenly I was able to simply draw life as I saw it without maintaining this ambiguity about my orientation. And so I think a lot of people appreciated me more and gave me, more strokes for my cartooning after I came out.
I was just thinking, let's just take a deep breath for a second here. And what I'll do is I'll show people some examples so folks will know that gay comics is, we're not making a general comment. That was actually a title that you edited. It was gay comics. So folks, what you're going to see here, these are examples of covers from gay comics that was edited by Howard Cruz. Okay, so we're back. So still getting the hang of all this, one more question about that. Did you attempt to function for many years as a straight person? Did you, go out with women, that kind of thing? Or did you just not, how did that work in the personal life?
Well, I mean, certainly the reason I'm a grandfather is a legacy of the fact that I was trying hard to be straight when I was in college, particularly at the very beginning, because when I was in high school, I had a crisis over this issue, and I had a therapist who I didn't realize it at the time, but was himself homophobic. But he expressed his homophobia by basically saying, "No, you're not gay. You've just spent too much time going to an all-boys school," which I had. I went to a private school that was a boys' boarding school. He said, "You haven't been around girls enough, so be sure and go to a co-ed college, and it'll all straighten itself out." So I took that to heart and was determined to have a normal social life when I went to college at Birmingham Southern College. And indeed, I did find myself in a relationship with a wonderful girl named Pam, who is the person on whom the character of Ginger in Stuck Rubber Baby is based. And essentially, the most autobiographical thing in Stuck Rubber Baby is the story of Toland, Toland and getting Ginger pregnant in his efforts to behave like a straight person. And that happened to me. And as with Toland, the baby was given up for adoption. And then we had reunions. We had a reunion when she reached adulthood. And, she and I are in contact, and she has two kids who are my grandkids now.
Wow. Howard, I had no idea. I didn't know any of that was part of your life. So
The Other Sides of Howard Cruz.
There you go. See, folks, what did I say if you were here for the introduction? I said hopefully we'll see many of the other sides of Howard Cruz, and I think we certainly have today. And so I guess the last thing, because we got a little more personal today than I think we did in previous conversations. How long have you been married now?
Well, Eddie and I got married in 2004, so I guess that means we're married 8 years now. And, of course, we've been together for 33 years, but only, you know, when Massachusetts made same-sex marriage legal were we able to be legally married.
And you've got almost – it's amazing. You've got almost a decade of marital bliss going, and anyone who reads your blog, you know, knows that you're very involved with Eddie and seem to have a wonderful, thriving personal life. You know, did marriage change anything for you in a way that it would change anything for a straight couple, do you think?
Sort of, it didn't change anything about our relationship. Essentially, we had learned to be a couple, you know, for decades before we were legally married. And essentially, the only reason to marry, was it was sort of irresistible to be a part of history. At that time, Massachusetts was the only state that had legalized gay marriage. The fact that George W. Bush wouldn't want me to made me want to. But it didn't really change the relationship, other than the fact that as we reach our golden years, as they say, you're aware that there are a lot of ways that life is made safer for older married couples than for single older people. And this is one of the reasons why it's so important to get the Defense of Marriage Act repealed, because right now we have all of the state privileges of marriage that a state can confer, but it is illegal for any federal agency to recognize us as a couple. So when we do our taxes, for example, we have to list ourselves as married for the state form and you know, single for the federal form, which made me have to quit using software because the tax software simply couldn't deal with someone who didn't give the same information on their state form as their federal form.
You would think that they've made adjustments for that by now. I mean,
well, maybe they have. We once we bought a house up here, we were a little scared to not have an actual accountant doing our taxes, because there are whole things about real estate taxes that were over our heads, and I was afraid if I did software, I would do something wrong. So we have, for the last few years, we've had an accountant, and perhaps they've wised up now that there are a bunch of states that have gay marriage. They realize, oh, we're losing customers over this.
Now, I read in your blog and saw pictures that Eddie was very involved with Elizabeth Warren's campaign, and good for him on that. I wondered, is it important to you, having an eight-year marriage now, is it important to you to let people know that, you know, in this case, a gay marriage, and there'll come a point where we will not have to add the word gay, it's just marriage, but we're not at that point yet. Where a gay marriage, you want other men to know that, you know, it is possible to, you guys have been together 33 years, I think you said, 8 years in marriage, that it works. It's worked for you. It's, you know, this is your life.
Well, I think that's good for people to know, you know, particularly for political reasons, so that people will get over the notion that there's some big danger to society to have same-sex marriage. I think if you required same-sex marriage for heterosexuals, you would find a lot of unhappy heterosexuals. And similar reasons, you know, when you demand that the only way gay people get married is to marry the opposite sex, you know, you create a lot of unhappy homosexuals. This has been the way it's been for, you know, as long as I've been out of the closet until these recent years. Now, one reason that anybody who reads my blog is going to be very aware of Eddie's existence is simply that the point of the blog is to kind of invite people who are interested in my work to, you know, come into my house, see what my life is like. And, you know, my life has Eddie all rolled into it. They'll also learn about, you know, our pets, or I mean, we lost our dog recently. Yes, and that was very sad, and it was in the blog, you know, Facebook and stuff like that. And now we're introduced a new dog into our household, and we're all getting used to each other. You know, all of these things, plus, you know, my history, old comics that I drew years ago, you know, that I wouldn't put in a book just out of curiosity. These are ways, sort of like when I was 16 and had this unusual opportunity to spend an afternoon with Milton Caniff in his studio, and it was a huge thrill, and just to be in the presence of someone whose work I admired. And, you know, I for people for whom it's a thrill, to come into my house and learn what my life is like and stuff. That's the point of the blog.
Well, and if just for the record, if you weren't public about that stuff in the blog and in conversation, I would never bring it up because it's not my goal to invade your privacy. But because, you know, you opened that door, I thought it'd be interesting for people who are interested in your work to hear a little more about it.
No, actually, I mean, I'm very in favor of, you know, as I said, I'm in favor of people being able to be honest in the world in general. And I think everybody benefits if you stop living in fantasy worlds about what the lives people live and start saying, okay, this is the way the things really are. I mean, we still have a lot of people who live in this fantasy world who think that heterosexual marriage is almost exclusively, families, a few kids being raised by husband and wife, whereas, you know, the statistics show that, you know, vast number, 50% or something, of families these days are single parent families. And that's another way that people live. And it's stupid to pretend that that's not the way people live. And so, you know, I just take a stand for let's be real. That's what I try to be in favor of in all aspects of my life.
Well, let's come back to your work and wind up there. What is next coming from Howard Cruz? What can your fans look forward to after this book?
Well, living in a world where the marketplace for freelance cartoons has collapsed due to the digital era, you know, and the fact that I'm of age to get Social Security checks now, there's much less pressure in my life to be constantly trying to get freelance work. So I tend to do small projects for the fun of it, and occasional freelance projects for pay when I get the chance. Lately, I've begun this very infrequently updated set of webcomics called Occasional Comics, the point of which is to give me a place to put up comic strips when I have time to draw them and when they come to me without being under deadline pressure. Right now, I think there are 5 of them. I put the most recent one up last week. And, you know, I make no promises about how often I'll do it, but it is nice to occasionally express myself in the comic strip form, and the number of magazines that will pay you to do comic strips these days, particularly for anything like a professional rate, are very slim. Everybody's going through this shakedown period. You know, people, famous cartoonists who've been, you know, in demand for decades are suddenly finding themselves laid off from newspapers, like with editorial cartoonists. And it's a crazy time to try to earn a living, but eventually, hopefully, it will all shake itself out and people will be willing to pay for the level of work it takes to do the comic strip form. If you're not doing your standard issue superhero comics that still have a great big, you know, blockbuster audience and get movies made.
All right. Well, folks, listen, it's a good time to tell you that you can find the other sides, plural, of Howard Cruz in great bookstores everywhere, or order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. And if you're watching the video for this, you want to look just below the video, right down there. You see where I'm pointing? Down there. I'm not pointing at my friend Howard. I'm pointing down the page. I'm not pointing there either. I'm pointing just down the page. And I just want you to know that when you see the image of the book, The Other Sides of Howard Cruz, you can just click on that. It'll take you right to Amazon.com. You can order the book, help Howard out a little bit, help me out a little bit, and get the book instantly at a great price. So do that right now. Howard's website is Howard Cruz, and it's C-R-U-S-E. lulu.com. You can see more of his work. You can see his blog. You can pay tribute to Lulu there, see pictures of Eddie Cederbaum working in the Elizabeth Warren campaigns, all kinds of good stuff there. Get lost in it for a couple hours. How are you doing? I don't remember if you're on Facebook or Twitter. I can't remember.
Yes, I am. I have a Facebook profile page and a fan page, which is Howard Cruz Art. The reason I make that distinction is I try to stay mainly personal on the profile page, not have people buried in plugs for things that will make money for me. The fan page is the place for people to, like and be sign up for updates. And there they'll learn if I have an interview or something. I'll plug some of that stuff on the main page, but I don't feel guilty when I, when I act like a person hawking my wares on the fan page.
No, not like me. Howard, Howard Cruz, it is always a pleasure to see you and to talk to you. And thank you so much for joining us again on Mr. Media today.
Well, same here. Thank you very much, Bob.
You can see and hear almost 1,000 Mr. Media interviews by visiting our main site, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Or check out the more than 200 video interviews on the Mr. Media radio site on YouTube. And I'd sure appreciate if you'd show some love for Mr. Media's advertisers, including Stitcher. Apple named Stitcher a top 5 news app of 2011. It's a free mobile app for your smartphone or tablet that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. You can listen whenever you want to more than 5,000 shows, get customized recommendations, and discover what your friends are listening to. My own list of Stitcher favorites is pretty eclectic. I start my day with an hour of MSNBC's Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. Then it's the latest 2-minute update from the Onion News Network. After that, I'll listen to WTF with Mark Maron, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, and excerpts from E's Chelsea Lately and The Soup with Joel McHale. Also in regular rotation on my Stitcher playlist, The BS Report with ESPN's Bill Simmons, The TechCrunch Headlines, and The Don Geronimo Show. The latest episodes of each show, whether originating from broadcasts, cable TV, radio syndication, or podcasts, are continuously updated. Stitcher is a free app for your iPhone, iPad, Kindle, Fire, BlackBerry, Droid, and more. And show your support of Mr. Media by getting, did I mention it's free? The app at stitcher.com/Mr. Media. That's stitcher.com/MR Media. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We're also supported by Audible. Check out Audible's 30-day trial membership and download the audiobook version of the book everyone's been talking about, 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James. Sign up for your free trial today at audible.com/radio. Again, audibletrial.com/radio. And finally, if you need a disc jockey for a wedding, bar mitzvah, corporate event, or just a big old party, please consider calling 1-800-DIAL-DJS, the party authority, for all your party entertainment needs. You can call 1-800-DIAL-DJS or go to their website, 1-800-DIAL-DJS.com, and tell them Mr. Media sent you. And thanks for listening.